our sustaining partners. You mean everything for us. Thank you for our first-time contributors and our continuing.
We're Japan there. Coming at you straight from Wave Farm.
WGXC, Acra, 90.7 The Beat.
Tuesday, October 20th, tune into all your favorites on WGXC at 90.7 FM. On the WGXC morning show, for instance, there's The Better Weather from the Catskill Makers Syndicate, and also comedy clips from J.L. Colvin. Ron Diamondstein's back with One Size Fits All at 11 a.m., and at 8 p.m., tune in to Ukuleles Unleashed from Johnny Sturman in Lexington and Carmen Borgia in Catskill. Live on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Glen Falls House in Round Top, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Several hundred people turned out to the Women's March in Albany October 17th. As did thousands at similar marches across the country. Representative Paul Tonko, who represents Albany County in Congress, was at the Albany event on the sidewalk along Wolf Road and spoke with WGXC's Galen Joseph Hunter.
So I'm streaming right now live.
Okay.
I'm with Congressman Tonko. Do you want to say anything about where we are and what we're doing here, or anything at all you'd like to say?
Sure. It's good to be at the corner of Wolf Road and Route 5, which is one of the busiest corners in the 20th Congressional District, with people doing what we are so proud of being able to do, and that is to speak our mind and to appeal to those in the ranks of the elected to do the right thing by the American people. So I've seen everything from concern about filling the vacancy for the Supreme Court until after the election, to signs for the environment, to signs for issues that will come before the court, the Affordable Care Act, Roe v. Wade, and a number of items. So this is so good to see the people speaking out at a time that is very critical. And I'm encouraged because over 20 million people have voted already. So there's a robust feeling of just getting to the polls and voting. And that's the first step. Exercise that given right, and let's have America speak to what their choices, what her choices ought to be.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay, my pleasure.
Thank you.
I will say that I'm very impressed with the crowd, the size
it's
of the crowd.
It's a huge turnout.
It's tremendous.
Yes.
Huge turnout with, again, a multiple of expressions that are all about, you know, people watching Washington closely and calculating what they're doing, and they're formulating their vote based on that. So
absolutely.
Very proud and impressed by the whole exercise.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
If we go down, we can really walk up. Excellent. Oh, yeah, yeah. Right.
William J. Kemble is reporting for the Daily Freeman that incumbent U.S. Representative Antonio Delgado and one of his four challengers, Republican Kyle Van Der Water, faced off in a televised debate October 15th. Throughout the event, televised on WMHT-TV, Van Der Water labeled the Rhinebeck Democrat as, quote, far left, unquote. Delgado responded by saying that he has spent the past 2 years meeting with constituents who are trying to deal with issues rather than labels. Quote, there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of pain, a lot of hurt across the country, all throughout New York 19. unquote, he said. Quote, I know because I'm going all throughout the district talking to small business owners, talking to farmers, healthcare workers, firefighters, teachers, and I can hear the pain in people's voices, the uncertainty around the corner, unquote. Vanderwater of Millbrook said he is, quote, running for Congress because the far left has failed the United States of America, and I believe my opponent is part of the far left, unquote. Dan Clark, host of the statewide public affairs program, quote, New York Now, unquote, moderated the debate. Ed McKinley from the Times Union and WAMC Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn served as panelists. The differences between the candidates were clear on most issues. The conversation ran the gamut from taxes, the economy, COVID-19, the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett, the potential expansion of the Supreme Court, political discord in the United States, green jobs, climate, and agriculture. Green Party candidate Stephen Greenfield, Libertarian candidate Victoria Alexander, and write-in candidate Ola Hawatama were not invited to the debate. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Bill Williams is reporting for Columbia Green Media that a former officer at the Green Correctional Facility was charged October 15th with multiple felonies for allegedly falsifying reports while he was employed at the facility. State Police Troop K Public Information Officer Stephen Neville said, the man allegedly fabricated a report following an altercation between two men imprisoned at the facility. Mark Schumer Dodd, 25, of Selkirk, was charged with offering a false instrument, falsifying business records, and tampering with physical evidence, all class felonies, as well as official misconduct, a misdemeanor, Neville said. Schumer Dodd resigned from state service in July, said Rachel Connors, deputy director of public information with the State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision. Schumer Dodd was issued tickets to appear in Coxsackie Town Court on November 2nd, Neville said. The case was referred to state police by the State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision Office of Special Investigations. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper that the Valencia Village Board is trying to sell a former mill building on River Street that once housed the broadcast equipment company called Energionics. The village has received three bids to purchase the building since early summer, but village attorney Rob Fitzsimmons told the board in September it must wait for the state courts to transfer the title from the Valencia Local Development Corporation. The issue was discussed in executive session during the board's October 13th meeting because of ongoing litigation. The Development Corporation owns the former trolley depot and the U.S. Hotel on Main Street. It also managed a state and federal community development block grant received for the former Energionics building. The Development Corporation has now started the process of transferring the titles of the properties. Once that process is completed, it will then petition to dissolve the organization. Fitzsimmons has advised the board it must wait until the state resolves the title issues to sell the structure so the Energionics building is again off the market. WGXC bought its transmitter from Energionics. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a mostly sunny Sunday with a high near 56 and a low around 42. Monday, there's a 20% chance of showers before 2 p.m. with mostly cloudy skies, a high near 58 and a low around 47. Tuesday, again, there is a 30% chance of rain, mainly before 2 p.m. with cloudy skies, a high near 63 and a low around 47. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
WGXC always needs computer donations. If you have an old one you don't need, and it's either a Macintosh 2011 or newer 2.0 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, or Windows 2012 or newer 2.4 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, email info at wgxc.org for more information.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Brian Zimmerman of Catskill, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
It's time again for WGXC's Pledge Drive. This time, essential radio is the theme. And we know that these days during the pandemic, not all of you have the means to make a donation to community radio. Those of you that do have the means to keep community voices on 90.7 FM, please do at wgxc.org/donate or call 518-697-7400. But if you do not have the means these days, there are still ways to help. For one, you could call our 3-minute phone line at 518-291-WGXC or 518-291-9492. Leave a 3-minute message about why community radio is important to you and why others should make a donation to WGXC. If you do have the means, by all means do become a sustainable supporter at wgxc.org/donate and help keep community radio on the air in your community. If you don't have the means, you can also amplify the WGXC Essential Radio Pledge Drive on social media by retweeting and liking and sharing posts about the WGXC Pledge Drive or about how to become a sustainable supporter at wgxc.org/donate. Please do what you can to help keep community voices on the air at 90.7 FM.
You know, I was listening to the radio and I heard this thing.
90.7 FM, listener-aided and abetted radio.
I love books. Do you love books? Books are great. Read more books. Listen to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM. Hooray!
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Columbia Green Community College, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Mishuda. I'm 18 years old, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Fatia. I'm 6 years old, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Lena, and I'm from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Bookish things.
And that's what we're going to talk about today, because that's what we do.
Yay!
And we want to thank everyone who donated during the Essential Radio Pledge Drive. We know WGXC can use all the support we can get. It's never too late to join the fun of becoming a sustaining donor or a one-time donor. So feel free to continue contributing to WGXC, even though the pledge drive has passed. But thank you so much to everyone that contributes.
Yay.
So who wants to start off talking about a book or something bookish?
Well, the reason I was late today when we were about to start recording was actually because I was caught up in reading Edgar Allan Poe for American Literature. And even though it's technically school reading, I still really enjoy Edgar Allan Poe. We read the story of The Black Cat, and I also got to read A Cask of Amontillado again, which is one of my favorite of his, which I think is one of his most well-known. So,
although I haven't read it.
You haven't read The Cask of Amontillado?
No, I don't think I've actually read much Poe. I need to read some more. I've read The Telltale
it's the
Heart.
Perfect season to read it.
Yeah. I think I've only read Telltale Heart and some of his poems. But The Cask of
Amontillado.
What's that about?
Spelled with two L's. It is about these two men at like a festival, and one of them has a grudge against the other. So he decides to lure him into his like winery or catacombs and decides that the best way to get revenge is to wall him up in the catacombs and leave him there. And it is very, very good. And I believe it's one of his like most well known.
And what's The Black Cat?
The Black Cat was very surreal. It also involves bodies being walled up, which is great. Very interesting. But it didn't really stand out to me. It just felt like a generic horror story, just with fancier language. This is the first time I've ever read it. Maybe during class next week, I'll get more meaning out of it when it's like discussed by the class and all that. That one was all right. I was halfway through reading another one when I got your message. So I'm going to have to finish that one later and talk about it next week, because I'm not really sure what that one has going for it right now either. It's kind of boring.
I wonder what Poe is like in real life. I'm sure people have written about this, but
there's actually a musical written about this.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. It's called oh my gosh, it has a very long title. I'd have to look it up. It's called Nevermore, but it has like a longer title than that Edgar Allan Poe musical. It's called Nevermore, The Imaginary Life and the Mysterious Death of Edgar Allan Poe. And I do not believe it is accurate, like historically accurate, but it takes some stuff from historical sources, and it's very good and has really cool costumes and really good music. And I always wanted to see it, but I don't know if it's performed anymore.
I wonder if he was claustrophobic. So it seems like all these... these horrifying stories of his have to do with people getting like walled in or like in enclosed spaces.
I think he had quite a few problems in real life. Most writers back then did. But yeah.
So do you have a favorite of all of his works?
I hate to be stereotypical, but I really do like The Raven. And that actually is because of the musical, because they turned that poem into a really, really haunting song in the musical. And I like it very much. I like The Mask of Red Death, which is pretty cool. I think that's his story, right? Hold on. I need to make sure I'm not messing up. Yes, that is an Edgar Allan Poe story. I like The Mask of Red Death. We read that in, I believe, sophomore year of high school, and I really loved it and thought it was a really creepy story.
Maybe I'll read one for next week. Be fun.
It's the perfect time of year to talk about Edgar Allan Poe. It's spooky season, yeah. So.
Yeah, I messed up because I like reading spooky books in October, and I read one, and then the book I'm reading currently is not spooky at all. Like, what am I doing? I mean, it's a very good book, but defeats the focus.
Yeah.
But I have a different book that I wanted to talk about that is kind of spooky. That's an old favorite that I like to share once in a while. It's called Through the Woods by Emily Carroll. It's a graphic novel of short stories, and it's super beautiful and lots of creepy stories. So there's 5 stories, and they all follow journeys into and sometimes out of the eerie abyss that is the woods. And so they're all very different. Stylistically, they're maybe similar, but... they're all very different stories. And this one was a fun one that we did for Battle of the Books 1 year. And it was the first graphic novel that we ever did for Battle. And it was very challenging writing questions for it, because we could use the wording, but there's limited words in a short story collection of graphic novels or of comics. So then we could also use visual elements, but then it was tricky trying to decide what was going to be too easy versus too hard, but it was fun. And I think it was a nice break from the novels that were read that summer. And then I know the following year was the year when we got to do Nimona, which is a favorite of Amelia and mine. And Amelia was in Battle that year. And I think that was the book that you all knew the best because you loved it so much. And I actually recently read Noel Stevenson, who wrote and illustrated Nimona, put out a memoir this past year about her young life so far, but so focused around her years as an artist. But she's very young, so it's very much a portion of life memoir, but it's told in, you know, it's a graphic novel memoir. So it's got her interesting art.
And I just learned that Lumberjanes, which is one of her series, has been optioned for an animated series, I think by HBO Max, but I'm not sure. But I'm excited for that because that's another series of hers that I love, that I haven't finished, that I need to finish or at least catch up on. I don't know if it's a complete series, but yeah. So it's a little hard to describe through the woods, but it's very good and I highly suggest it. And it's available through the library, Through the Woods by Emily Carroll. And the graphic novel by Noelle Stevenson is called The Fire Never Goes Out, A Memoir in Pictures. Hooray. So if you're interested in learning about an artist's life, young life, it's a good one. Mm-hmm. I also read a really fun picture book this week. Just want to shout out my picture books because, as many of you know, I like to read picture books. But there's a new nonfiction picture book called Eye by Eye, Comparing How Animals See. And that's just something that I've always been fascinated by, is like wondering how different creatures see the world. So it's a very simple picture book. You don't get a huge amount of information from it, but they sort of talk about different animals and how their eyes differ from human eyes and help you think about how they might see the world. That's fun. Hooray. Eye by Eye, Comparing How Animals See by Sarah Levine and T.S. Spooky Tooth, which is a really cool last name.
That's an amazing last name.
Anyways, who else has a book they want to talk about?
I have a book. So the book is The Power by Naomi Elderman. It's a dystopian book. So I chose a dystopian book because like it's a theme in my English class that we're reading all dystopian books this semester. So in a matriarchal society, a gushing male writer writes to an influential author about his fictional account of how the matriarchy came to be. 5,000 years earlier, our current time, men dominated society. Then stories emerge of women who can protect themselves with an electrical power, and more than protection, they can attack, torture, and even kill. Roxy is an English teenager whose mother is attacked. She manages to defend herself, injuring one attacker, but the others beat her up and killed her mother. Tunde is an aspiring journalist in Nigeria who is attracted to Enuma. Before he can initiate, she zaps him and knees kisses him while he's paralyzed. He starts to film women using their emerging power and publishing it online. Margaret is a major in Wisconsin who discovers her daughter, Jocelyn, is also developing these powers. And Ellie is a foster girl who is attacked by her foster father and kills him with her powers before taking refuge in a convent. And then like the power begins to emerge like everywhere in the world. And it's just like the story of each characters and their journey of how they learn to use the powers.
I've wanted to read that one for a long time, but I haven't yet. That's cool that you're reading it. Did you finish it yet, or are you still reading it?
I'm still reading it.
Do you have a favorite character so far?
I mean, no, but I enjoy the powers. It's like everyone, I mean, I think Ashley, her mother died, like that's sad. But I'm happy that she was able to save herself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's tough finishing it because like midterms are here. And yeah, it's like.
Yeah, Mashuda mentioned that she was having midterms the other day, and I can't believe it's already the midterm. Feels like school just started.
Yeah. Yeah. College is tough because like it's, you will think it's not like you have no work, but then it just suddenly gets to you.
Thanks for sharing. Lena, did you have a book you wanted to talk about?
Yes, though my book isn't very Halloween seasoned. And okay. I think Amelia will like this book. It's called Wings of Fire, the first book. And I'm going to read the back since I didn't really have that much time since I got the book recently and stuff to read it. The dragonettes are coming to save the day. Kalea has lived his whole life under the mountain. The mudwing dragonette knows that war is raging between the dragon tribes in the world outside, a war that he and four other dragonettes are destined to end according to the mysterious prophecies they've been taught. The five chosen dragonettes were stolen from their homes while they were still in their eggs and hidden away for years, all to fulfill the prophecy. But not every dragonette wants a destiny, and when danger threatens one of their own, Clay and his friends may choose freedom over fate, leave the mountain, and set the dragon world on a course that no one could have predicted.
Dragons.
That makes me really happy. Now we can, because I had started reading that series, like I was way into it by the time I came onto the radio show. So now you guys finally get the opportunity to hear someone's opinion of it from the very beginning. So I don't have to risk spoiling anything whenever I talk about it.
It's going to be kind of hard for me to at least try to read almost all the books because I'm pretty busy with school. Since I have two teachers this year, that means two times the homework.
No. Well, you have your whole life to read the Wings of Fire series.
Yeah.
Whole life. You could be reading the last book in a assisted living facility as a senior citizen.
That's how I'm going to be doing it.
You're like, these dragons really shared my life with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you like it because otherwise Amelia will be sad.
I'll be very sad if you don't like it.
I'm already liking it because even though I haven't read it that far, I still like it even though all I've seen is like them explaining the dragons and the drawings of the dragons.
Oh yeah, I forgot there was artwork. The front.
It has a map.
Yay, maps. How about Fatia? Do you have a book to share?
Yes, she does. Okay. The spider book.
You have a spider book?
Yeah, this is the white spider book.
Oh, Diary of a Spider.
I think it's like a queen spider or a king spider. Because like in the next page of like so I don't know how to read, but I do know how to show the pictures. But
yeah.
Like there's some like I think the like the his people that like the kings or queens people. And the next page says, like, they're playing that, and look, that's crazy, because some people, the, like, real people, is playing with the spiders, crazy. And the next page says, like, this says, this, that spider's up there, and, like, that's a bee. I feel like that's the animal world. And how did they get there?
Cool that this spider's diary has so many pictures in it.
Yeah. And this is like the slide. I think this is like the slide where they, oh, I love the flowers in the tree. And whoa, that people is scared of spiders. Looks like me. I'm scared of spiders.
You're scared
too.
Of spiders?
Yeah, I'm really actually scared of spiders. They're so scary. Read the rest of like the garbage and flush it down.
Oh, poor spiders. I like to trap them and then put them outside. I don't like them being inside.
Yeah.
Especially the really big ones.
Is it like, I think this is like a leaf paper, like where they write it all there. They write it all of this thing. They write it all of the. I think they like.
It's very creative of them.
What is this page? I think they have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 faces.
Whoa.
8 faces a lot.
So it's the life of spiders and what they
do. Yeah. So for our listeners who can't see the pictures, this book is called Diary of a Spider by Doreen Cronin. And I think the illustrator is Harry Bliss.
Like, this is the title.
The picture by Harry Bliss, yeah.
And so it has different diary entries, but then there's also really cool pictures showing you what happens. So what's your favorite part about that book?
My favorite part of the book is the superhero part. Yeah, yeah. Superhero part?
Can you describe it? Why is it famous?
The superhero part.
The superhero part, I'm superhero nimble because I love superheroes and superheroes can, but sometimes like Hulk isn't really real. Hulk isn't, that's right. There's
but
no
he's
Hulk.
A cool superhero. So is the spider a superhero?
No.
Or a superhero comes and helps?
Yeah, I mean, it's like superhero people. They're just people. Yeah. Everyone is just...
Oops, we lost you. Thanks for sharing, Fatia. Sounds like a fun story. Before we go, I'm recording the radio show with you all from the teen room, and I eyed some books from across the way, and I figured I could highlight some of our newer books that we have that also seem potentially timely for the time of year we're in. So this one's called Lobizona by Romina Garber, and I'll read you the description on the inside. Some people are illegal. Lobizonas do not exist. Both of these statements are false. Manuela Azul has been crammed into an existence that feels too small for her. As an undocumented immigrant who's on the run from her father's Argentinian crime family, Manu is confined to a small apartment and a small life in Miami, Florida, until Manu's protective bubble is popped. Her surrogate grandmother is attacked, lifelong lies are exposed, and her mother is arrested by ICE. Without a home, without answers, and finally without shackles, Manu investigates the only clue she has about her past, a mysterious Z emblem, which leads her to a secret world buried within our own, a world connected to her dead father and his criminal past, a world straight out of Argentinian folklore, where the seventh consecutive daughter is born a bruja, a witch, and the seventh consecutive son is a lobizon, a werewolf, a world where her unusual eyes allow her to belong. As Manu uncovers her own story and traces her real heritage all the way back to a cursed city in Argentina, she learns it's not just her U.S. residency that's illegal, it's her entire existence. I've heard this is very good, and it seemed with the connections to the werewolves and the witches, very timely. That was a very beautiful cover too, which I can't show you over the radio, but trust me. And then go look it up online. It's gorgeous. Then borrow the book. And the next book I wanted to highlight is called The Voting Booth by Brandi Colbert. And I recently read a book by her that I really loved. And this one also seems timely because we have election day around the corner. Here's the description. Marva Sheridan was born ready for this day. She's always been driven to make a difference in the world. And what better way than to vote in her first election? Duke Crenshaw is so done with this election. He just wants to get voting over with so he can prepare for his band's first paying gig tonight. Only problem, Duke can't vote. When Marva sees Duke turned away from their polling place, she takes it upon herself to make sure his vote is counted. She hasn't spent months doorbelling and registering voters just to see someone denied their right. And that's how their whirlwind day begins, rushing from precinct to precinct, cutting school, waiting in endless lines, turned away time and again, trying to do one simple thing, vote. They may have started out as strangers, but as Duke and Marva team up to beat a rigged system and find Marva's missing cat, it's clear that there's more to their connection than a shared mission for democracy. Romantic and triumphant, the voting booth is proof that you can't sit around waiting for the world to change, but some things are meant to be. I like how there's a random missing cat thrown into the story. Find the cat! Oh, I found him. He's on the back of the book.
That was pretty random.
Spoiler! Oh,
little cat.
He's right back there.
Kitty.
But that one sounds fun. I actually have that audiobook waiting for me. So as soon as I finish my current read, that's my next one. But now I really want to read Lobizona too. Fun. All right. So that's all the time we have for today. But we hope everyone has a great week with lots of quality reading time. And we'll be back next week to talk about some more books. Happy reading.
Bye.
Come and sit right over my door. A feeling seems to tell me I never see my man no more. I feel my love a jumping, my heart a bumping. I'm on my feet and cue. I feel my brain a thumping. I've got no time to lose.
So normally on this show in pre and post COVID times, we would be taking the first portion of the show to talk about newly released movies. But Jenny, what have you been watching lately?
Let me first bring back The Dispatch from the Woodstock Film Festival.
Yes.
Which was two weeks ago. Time is not real. I ended up going to two of the nights, which was really fun. I went on the opening night to see Los Hermanos, which was excellent. If you are interested in learning more about the Woodstock Film Festival, you can go back into the archives and listen to our interview with Mira Blaustein, which we did on our last show. But
she's one of the directors and co-founders of the film festival.
Yeah. And then the other night I went on Friday Los Hermanos was at the Greenville Drive-In. And then the Friday night I went to the Overlook Drive-In in Poughkeepsie and I saw What Breaks the Ice and Ammonite. And they were both fun.
Nice.
It didn't, nothing really blew me out of the water. Los Hermanos was definitely the best of the three.
Can you give me like a little breakdown of all of them? Like a little synopsis?
Yeah. So Los Hermanos is a documentary that it was actually the world premiere of them showing it. Yeah, which is wild.
Awesome.
But it follows these two brothers who were both born in Cuba, but the elder brother, when he was like 14, moved to the United States to pursue his music career. They're both musicians. Both of their parents were musicians. So it's just like totally their whole passion and like their whole family's passion. Mm-hmm. But it kind of follows them in their relationship where for decades, like they're both in their 50s now, maybe, or 40s and 50s, they have been separated and they were not able to play together because the elder brother lives in the United States and the younger brother lives in Cuba. And there is like, it's just really beautiful. The music was incredible.
Wow.
I really liked it. It like made me laugh, made me cry. You know, your classic.
Yeah.
hit all the notes.
All the notes. What kind of instruments did they play?
The older brother plays the violin and the younger brother plays the piano. And they're both composers also. Like they're both incredible and like world-class musicians, like top of their game.
Wow.
But yeah, it was really lovely. And then the second film I watched was called What Breaks the Ice. And that one was a narrative film, it was basically about these two girls over, it was filmed in Cold Spring, which was fun because I was like,
nice.
local Hudson Valley. love a local movie, but it takes place in the 90s, which is also fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about two teenage girls, one who's a local, a townie, and then the other one who's like a summer kid from Manhattan, and like they like become super, super fast friends, and kind of just like all the events that transpire between them over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was really fun. It was, the thing about that night was I saw that movie and Ammonite at the same time, and they were both on like the darker side, like visually, not thematically.
Yeah, just the
just like they just both take place at night a lot, or like in candlelight.
Yeah.
And so seeing it at the drive-in was kind of tough because you just couldn't see the screen all the time.
That is the one downer.
Yeah. So I'd like to give them both another watch someday. And then Ammonite, do you want to talk about actually a little bit? Cause I know you haven't seen it, but you gave the summary for it last time and it was so great.
Oh, thanks. So I'm so curious about it, though. I know that it like We had high expectations, I think, but
my review of it is that it was mediocre. Yeah, not like, bad, fine. But just like fine. It's fine. The thing is that, and it's, you know, I talked about this in our very first show, so it's possible that you may not have heard my opinion about it, but one of the best movies, one of the best period romances between two women on a beach came out this year. It was called Portrait of a Lady on Fire. And you know, just nothing will ever measure up to that. Like,
it's now that you've been at the top, it's so hard. Everything's so hard.
Literally a perfect film. It's like one of the most romantic and beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. Gosh. And it's just like, you know, other films that are about lesbians by the seaside just don't stand a chance if they don't measure up.
They don't hold a candle. And I still freaking haven't seen Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I really got to do it. I think it is still streaming.
It's on Hulu.
So that is, I mean, everyone I talk to loves that movie. That's Portrait of a Lady on Fire, folks. But Ammonite is another lesbians by the sea movie, like Jenny said. Great way to just like cap it real short.
One of my fave genres, you know.
It's like a semi nonfiction, or like inspired by true events, I guess you'd say. Story about the real life woman Mary Anning, who was a paleontologist, and this is England in like, I don't know, the
18 somethings, 40s,
exactly.
Maybe
like 19th century England. And she befriends a younger woman who's suffering from severe depression, and becomes maybe a little more than a friendship. And they're played by Mary Anning is played by Kate Winslet. Mm-hmm. And the younger woman, whose character's name I can't remember, is played by Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah.
And the trailers looked really good. I love fossils.
Yeah, the fossil content was definitely off the chain. It was really good. Nice.
That's really dope. Yeah. She really found some off the chain fossils in her day.
Yeah. Kate Winslet is like really captivating in it. I think she's really great. Saoirse Ronan, frankly, like I love her, but it was not her best performance. I don't know what was happening, but they also, it was just it had so much the energy of like being directed by a man, which is not something.
It was, wasn't it? Didn't
yes, it was. and it just
is not going to cut it.
It's not going to cut it. It's just like, you know, it's possible to direct a great film about women if you're a man, but it's harder.
It's harder. You're just like less likely to get it.
Yeah. It just had a lot of scenes that I took issue with.
Yeah. I can, knowing what I know just about it being directed by a man and you saying that, I can picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it's definitely worth a watch. I had a good time. I ate a lot of popcorn.
But I did want to get something out quickly. And Stay, you might know of this. And maybe J-Mac, because J-Mac lives in Hudson. On Saturday, there was a parade, a motorcycle parade.
Mm-hmm.
Motorcycle parade. And it actually went past my house and down the block. And Santa Claus was in the front of the parade. Right? And at the back of the parade, or in the middle of the parade, there was this one guy with this humongous Trump flag. It was humongous. So I think what happened, as they're going down the street, people not sure of what this is, they see Santa, motorcycles, Trump sign, some people flipping them off or whatever. Come to find out that the Columbia County ABATE was doing an Edith Cayce stocking fund parade that they do every year.
Are you angry today?
No, I'm not. But they do this every year. So I actually talked to one of my coworkers, shout out to Rob Brown, and I said, he told me he was a part of that. And I said, well, what was up with the guy in the back with the Trump flag? He said, sometimes guys sign up just to do their own thing. And he was not part of that group. So he also told me they had about 60 participants, and that, you know, Edith Cayce, we all know about Edith Cayce stocking fund.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically they were there for Edith Cayce stocking fund, that they don't want the harsh comments that come with one guy that decided, I'm going to make a political statement involved with something so meaningful for our community. He told me that they have drop boxes in Ghent at the White Stone, and you can drop back, you can drop unwrapped gifts there and wrap gifts there. But I think this was a good cause, Slay. And I think that he also told me that at the end of the event, the mayor showed up and did a speech. So I thought this was important because we looked on the community boards, people are talking about this, and then they're highlighting the fact that people was flipping the bird to Edith Cayce Stocking Fund Parade. Okay, I kind of get it, but if you got a guy with a humongous truck flag, and let's take this into consideration. The week before, there was about 10 trucks that came through Hudson with nothing but truck flags. They came right through Hudson with Trump flags all over. So now it's like, yo, this is the weekend. They just keep doing this. So I'm not saying that if anyone flipped the bird to anybody that it was okay. But I just thought, and I said to Rob Brown again, shout out to him, shout out to Columbia County ABATE, that they should make sure no matter what the political opinion is, that the people that are in this parade understands the meaning of the parade and they leave that political stuff to the side. Mayor, I'll talk to you.
Yeah, I did attend, you know, and I heard about the ride through Hudson. And I think that sometimes we put too much emphasis on, you know, Democrat, Republican, and, you know, politics, and not enough on motive and what people are trying to do. Because I think, you know, if someone rode by with a Biden flag or, you know, Obama or whoever, and people started, you know, flipping them off, you know, we might have a different reaction to it, especially if it was, you know, Obama. And I had the privilege of pulling up to the event. It was awkward. I was the only Black guy by far in a sea of all bikers, mostly Republicans. And, you know, I kind of said to them, you know, I'm happy that they're doing this. Like, no matter what politics is going on right now, we should still care for, you know, our young people and want them to have a great holiday. So I think we got to stop being so aggressive with some of the politics and how we treat each other.
Ed, you look like you want to say something there, sir. You got that Malcolm look.
I got that Malcolm look. Yeah, you know, it just makes me think, man, it's like, you know, how universal sort of this concept is. Obviously, I wasn't there and not too familiar with the direct topic. But I know, like, down here, like, one of our big biker gangs is the Outlaws, right? And the Outlaws, I mean, they're pretty feared and fierce, if you will. But one thing they do every year, man, they do one of the biggest toy drives and one of the biggest fundraisers for children with disabilities. That it's just strange how, you know, the community just doesn't even, you know, worry or be or not really too concerned about the politics associated with the gang itself, but really take time and focus on the work that they're trying to do. And it's a unifying thing if people allow it. So I think it's really cool that Mayor Johnson attended the event and even spoke at the event, because it is important, man. That's, you know, we can't base everything, all of our social interactions, on somebody's ideology, man. We got to be better and bigger than that sometimes. And sometimes the mission is bigger than us, right? So I think that's a good thing, and it's good leadership, man.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with Brittany Vogel, who's a candidate for the 107th Assembly District, which includes most of Rensselaer County, two towns in the southern Washington County, and six towns in Northeast Columbia County. Democrat, I believe, Work and Families Party, Jake Ashby is the incumbent. I notice you are a native of Rotterdam and a graduate of Hudson Valley Community College. So, Brittany, welcome to WOOC. And maybe just start off telling us a little bit about your background and then why you decided to run.
Great. And thank you so much for having me. Thank you for the opportunity. So right now I work as an assistant store manager at the Kindercook Hannaford, and just recently worked at the Lansingburg Hannaford. I grew up in a working class family. My dad works 80 hours a week and still lives paycheck to paycheck. My mom, you know, has medical debt that she will have with her entire life. Like you said, I went to Hudson Valley, but decided not to continue my degree because of the costs inhibitors that are put on, you know, that were put on the millennial generations and, you know, generations before that even, keeping working people from really doing what they want to do. You know, I always wanted to get my master's and further, but, you know, I didn't want to have a lifetime of student debt. So I've been working at Hannaford and I worked my way up to an assistant store manager. I started in 2008, I was 16 years old. And so that my first experience as a working adult was the recession. Then at that point, I saw people that had been working full-time jobs with full benefits lose that job and come work with me making, you know, minimum wage and with no benefits. And I also just see the pain and the struggle that working people face every single day, whether that's healthcare or education or childcare. And now we're in a pandemic. The working people have been put, you know, put last as a priority. You know, working people, we're essential workers and we provide so much to society and to the community. And we don't feel like we have a voice. We don't feel like our needs are being represented in the assembly or in government in general. I decided to run because I understand the issues on a personal basis, from firsthand knowledge and experience and from what I deal with on an everyday basis. And I decided I could use, you know, my skills and leadership, the fact that I care about the community. When I was 23 years old, and I'm 28 years old now. So when I was 23, I started a nonprofit called Upstate Cakes for Kids, which delivered birthday cakes, decorated and delivered birthday cakes to families living in poverty, to children living in poverty. And I think the children of our society, you know, especially the undeserved, those living in poverty deserve so much more in life. And I think that they have so much potential to do what they want. So I'm just bringing that service that I did as a 23-year-old up to, you know, till today, and actually want to continue to provide for our community, continue to provide for our children. And I think I'll be a strong voice. You know, I'm not trying to do this for myself. I'm trying to do it for all the people that are in so much pain right now that are struggling. And that really needs someone that is going to stand up for them in the assembly.
So looking at your website, Brittany2020.com, notice you got Eleanor's Legacy, Citizen Action, New York Progressive Action Network, CSCA, PEF, Capital Woman, Planned Parenthood, and a bunch of other good stuff. But I see one of the issues you're focusing on is the Green New Deal and climate, including closure of the Dunn Landfill, which we cover a lot here in our radio station. But so what are some of your climate and environmental concerns?
Sure. So I think we need to think about this as a plan for an economic recovery, because once the public health crisis is over, we're going to need to rebuild our economy. There's no going back to normal the way things were, you know, a couple months ago. We're going to need to rebuild, and we're going to need to rebuild in a smart way. And I think that if we put the investments in the right place, investing in new infrastructure, especially like broadband infrastructure, but then also renewable energies. There's so much opportunity for growth. They don't get the subsidies that they deserve. You know, we need to divest from our fossil fuels and oil subsidies and actually give them to the industries that are going to take us into the future and to make our environment sustainable. I care about clean air. I care about clean water. I think the Dunn Landfill is atrocious. The fact that was able to happen and, you know, the money that was associated to it to allow that to happen is something that I really care about, making sure that doesn't happen again. And I really, you know, my opponent says he supports clean water and cares about clean water, but then he votes against it. He voted against stopping weed killer from being used on state property, a known contaminant to water. He voted no to end hazardous waste loopholes for oil and gas, known to contaminate the environment and the water. So we need someone in the office and the assembly that actually is consistent in their values and what they say and what they do.
that actually cares about the community and actually cares about, you know, not just the next 2 years, 10 years, but the next 100, 200 years, you know, where, what can we do today that's actually going to put us on a sustainable, you know, spot for the future so that our state can thrive, you know, generations from now. I think there's a lot of things we can do right now that if we don't do, we're on a path to destruction. So, you know, it's so critical that we take the opportunity that we have now to make the changes that we need to make to adapt to our new, you know, society that we live in, where we see, you know, the storms that just happened last week that took out power for several days. You know, the intensity of these storms are only going to continue. The hurricanes and the wildfires, these things are going to continue to devastate our economy because of the costs associated with it, and devastate our environment, which people need to survive. So I think that I have a major focus on that, and I think we can use that as a way to recover our economy from this pandemic.
So one of the big issues, of course, right now for everybody is the COVID-19 situation. I also noticed you support single-payer health care, the New York Health Act. How would you respond to the criticism? Well, that's great, but it's going to cost taxpayers so much money.
Well, I think if you look at the system that we have now, especially with the pandemic, so many people lost their jobs and then equally lost their health.